name is Rabbi Dov Peretz of World Mizrahi, and the book he wrote is called The Jewish State, From Opposition to Opportunity. And in his book, he quotes this, and I read it a number of months ago, but I realized this is Parshas Bishalach. First of all, it's this week's Parsha, so I wanted to remember for that. But as we've been experiencing so much anti-Semitism in the world, anti-Zionism and struggles, it gave a new frame, a new framework, and kind of way of couching and perceiving what's happening in the world today. So here's what he says, and it's really amazing. So in this week's Parsha, first of all, the Jews leave Egypt. And leaving Egypt, you know, if you go from Egypt to Israel, to Canaan, I mean, what's the most direct way to get there? Along the sea. Derech Eretz Plishtim, what they call it. That's along the sea. They call it Via Maris, was another name for it. That's 11-day trek, 11 days walking up the coast, pretty quick. Or you could go the 40-year route, you know, making your way all throughout the Sinai Peninsula and Jordan and make the long circuitous route. So they didn't go, lo nachma am derech Eretz Plishtim. Hashem didn't bring them through the way of the Plishtim. Plishtim means, what's that today? Gaza. That's Gaza. Gaza and a little bit south of Gaza. But that's the Gaza area. So Hashem didn't bring them that way. Instead, Kikarovu. It says, because it's too close. But then it says, because Hashem is worried that there will be a war, and that they'll be afraid of the war, and they'll go back to Egypt. So we have to talk about what that means. And then, in Oz Yashir, they leave Israel. They leave Egypt. They go towards Israel, but they're making their way through Sinai, and they have the crossing of the Red Sea, amazing miracle. And then they sing Az Yashir. They sing Az Yashir, and in Az Yashir, it says, first of all, everyone was shocked. Everyone was amazed that they had this amazing crossing of the Red Sea. So the Torah says, Shamu Amim Yirgazun, the whole people in the world heard, and they were shaking with fear. Wow, this nation has broken free from slavery. The sea split for them, and then closed on the Egyptians, the mighty Egyptian army, and drowned them. So then it says, Chayel Achaz Yoshvei Palashas. So fear gripped the inhabitants of Philistia, Palestine, the Palestinians, the Plishtim. Okay, Palestinians today are not Plishtim. I know, I'm not saying, but I'm translating how people translate it. Philistines, right? Plishtim. But the Plishtim all of a sudden became very afraid. Az nivhalu alufa Edom. And the kings of Edom became bewildered. And finally, Ele Moav Yochozemu Ra'ad. And the powerful people of Moav were also trembling. These are three nations now. Peleshes, Edom, and Moav. So who do they represent, these three nations? Now there's a fascinating comment. This is what Rabbi Peretz pointed out. The Vilna Gaon, this is over 200 years ago, a long time ago, there was no Zionist state, there was no Israel. The Vilna Gaon, who is known, by the way, for having these pithy statements throughout his writings that ended up predicting, like there's things about the Holocaust, there's things that he said that he was known as an amazing genius, an amazing scholar, and he has like these almost prophetic statements sprinkled throughout his writings. He was just very interesting. So I had never seen this before until Rabbi Peretz pointed it out. He writes in the Sefer called Aderes Eliyahu on Habakkuk 3:14. I'm going to read to you what the Vilna Gaon writes. Three types of anti-Semitism. Three categories of anti-Semitism. And it's amazing because I always thought of two. I always thought of there being two. The two holidays that we have that are post-biblical holidays represent the two forms of anti-Semitism. But actually there's three, and we'll talk about the three right now. So he says, here's what he says. If you don't have it, I apologize, but I'll translate and I'll read slowly. He says, based on that verse we just read, Ela Hashloshahem, those three nations, again, Peleshes, Plishtim, Edom, and Moav, Heim Shlosha Mitzarnim Shel Eretz Yisrael. Those are the three enemies, or those who cause tsar, those who cause trauma to Israel, to the Jewish people. What does it mean? Moav, mi Mizrach, Moav to the east. Remember, it's standing in Israel. Moav is to the east. Edom, mi Darom. Edom is to the south. And Peleshes, mi Marav. And the Plishtim to the west. The west of Israel is just only, you know, basically southwest, Gaza, the Gaza area. Those three. So what are they? What are they now? So now it explains the three roots, the three paradigms of anti-Semitism. From biblical times till today. Moav. First you have Moav. Moav who? Avos HaTumah. Moav is the ultimate impurity. Shenitmo'bo Yisrael, that impurified Israel. So what's that? Spiritual contamination. Their goal is to corrupt us. Who in the Torah was a descendant of Moab?
Ruth.
Okay, good. But that's the Tanakh. The Torah. Who in the Torah? I'll give you even a hint. Sefer Bamidbar. Okay, close. You're close. Who in Sefer Bamidbar in Book of Numbers was the great prophet that was descendant of Moab? Balaam. Yes. So Balak in particular, Balak was the king who was the evil Balak. So Balak is a descendant of Moab. What did Balak want to do? Well, he wanted to curse us. He didn't want to wipe us out. He wanted to curse us. Moab wants to curse us. And then which other nation that we have a holiday for now didn't want to kill us, but they wanted to undermine our religious spirit. So the Greeks, exactly. Hanukkah. The Greeks are the descendants of Moab. This later became forced conversions and crusades on Jewish people. Times where Jews were not tried to, they weren't, we weren't tried, they didn't try to kill us, but they wanted to get rid of our spirit, spiritually. They wanted to undermine our religion. Moab wanted to spiritually contaminate us. So that's number one. That's what he says, number one, right? So he said, Moab hu avos hatuma. That's impurity. Edom hu avos hanazikim. Edom represents the principle of damages. Shehizikul li Yisrael beyoter. That they damaged the Jewish people extensively. Now Edom, who also in the Torah, is a descendant of Edom. Anyone know? Which nation is a descendant of Edom? Amalek, good. Amalek are the descendants of Edom. Amalek just wanted to kill the Jews. They didn't care if we converted, whatever. They wanted to kill Jews. Edom is physical destruction. That's Amalek. And then which holiday do we have that the protagonist is a descendant of Amalek? Exactly. Haman and Purim, which was the same thing. Haman's goal was to annihilate all the Jews, to kill all the Jews. He didn't care what our religion is, whatever. He wants us dead. He saw us as a different nation and wanted us dead. And which, just as an example, which evil empire in the more modern era? What? Nazis. Exactly. Nazis, same thing. They didn't care. In fact, someone just gave me, someone here at the hospital just gave me this like interesting document that a doctor had written at a hospital in Germany. In the 1930s, when the Nazis forbade Jews from practicing medicine, he was fired from his job. And he writes in there about how he only had one Jewish grandparent. Three of his grandparents were not Jewish, and he didn't consider himself Jewish. And yet he was fired and eventually killed. The Nazis wanted us all dead. They don't care about our beliefs, and that's Edom. That's in Ezekiel. Okay? That is what I always thought was the paradigms of anti-Semitism. There's those who say, I don't like your religion, just quit your religion and then you're fine. And that's Hanukkah. Then there are those who say, I don't like you. I don't like you people. I don't care what you believe, what you do. I want you all dead. That's Hanukkah. That's Nazis. But then there's one more. There's one more. And this, I hadn't been exposed before. And this, remember, he's writing hundreds of years ago. So you'll see how relevant it is today, though. So then he says, Uplishtim. And then there's the Plishtim. Hatsaru li Yisrael b'ma'od, and who caused much pain to Israel, to the Jewish people. And what's their role in the world? V'lohinichu lahem shum memshala v'shalton. And their goal is to prevent any government or sovereignty in their land. The Plishtim represents political denialism. So there's spiritual contamination, there's physical destruction, and there's the Plishtim who represented political denialism. Their goal of preventing any sort of government or sovereign presence in the land of Israel. That's what the Plishtim represented. Their main function in Tanakh, if you think about it, do anyone remember the first time we encountered the Plishtim? Okay, David and Melech, you're right. But the first time, yes, Avraham. Avraham, when Avraham digs the wells, the Plishtim are the ones who filled them back in. Then Yitzchak redigs the wells, the Plishtim fill them back in. They don't want the Jews to have any sense of sovereignty or dwelling in the land. Then, you're right, Then we came to another type of Plishtim, because by the way, the Plishtim were not the same people. There was one group of Plishtim in the times of Avraham, and now in the times of the Exodus. Then we know in Tanakh, when you read Tanakh closely, we did this in this class, and now it's been a few years, we read Tanakh, and we saw that in the times of Shaul and David, there were Plishtim in the same area, southwest especially, in Gaza area, but they were seafarers. They had come, and that's because they had iron. They had types of fighting utensils that came from Greek and Europe, and they had come from other lands, but they took on the name Plishtim.
Different from the Phoenicians? Is there a source of, for the Phoenicians in the...
There's a lot of overlap, exactly. So anytime there was a Jewish kingdom, the Plishtim attempted to form, you know, and the Jews were trying to form a central government, the Plishtim's role was to try to prevent it. In fact, interestingly, you notice throughout Tanakh, whenever the Plishtim arise to try to prevent David and Shaul from having their kingdom, and they're constantly a thorn in their side, constantly fighting them, constantly attacking them, constantly trying to prevent Jewish sovereignty in the land, they never solidified into a nation until basically the book of Shmuel, and that was the time when Israel was gaining sovereignty, and that's when, and the Jews were the Plishtim, sorry, from different tribes united under one king, because that was a time when the Jewish presence in the land was becoming stronger, and so as the Jews' presence became stronger, the opposition proportionally increased, meaning they didn't have a national identity until the Jewish people in the land of Israel had a national identity. Then the Plishtim said, we need to stop this, and they became unified in that goal. So basically, if we go back, and I'll start to conclude now, if we go back to the beginning of this week's Parsha, lo nachama am derech eretz Plishtim, that Hashem didn't let us go through the derech eretz Plishtim, because ki karov hu, it was too close. What does it have to do with being too close? Other than the next verse, which says, because there's going to be a war, and they're going to want to go back to Egypt. Meaning they're not ready yet to fight a war to defend their land when they just got out from being slaves. They're going to be afraid of war. So it's one thing if they go and build a national identity and they go to their land and then they get attacked. It's one thing they're going to defend their land. But when they just came out of Egypt and there's already people saying, no, you can't come here. We don't want you in this land. They're going to say, okay, fine, we won't go. So Hashem said, no, I know I can't take them this way. They have to go a circuitous route to get off their slave mentality, to develop their national identity, to develop their national pride and sense of cohesiveness, and then they're going to be attacked again, but then they'll be ready for it at least. And that's what's going to happen. Because they were, Plishtim were waiting. They said, you want to form a national identity? We're waiting to stop it. And so then he concludes. I'll just read you the last piece and then we'll end with that. So the Vilna Gaon concludes and he says, V'heim avos halatzim, these are the three categories of you know, scoffers is Latzim, but you know, challenges to the Jewish people. V'heim avos halatzim, v'heim keneged gimel avos shebekedusha. And they, just like there are three principles, core principles of holiness, so too there are three core principles of antithesis, so to speak, which seems to imply, which you hear a lot in Israel today, this phrase actually, but it seems to imply that the three forms of holiness are the Jewish people, meaning just our lives, just being alive as Jewish people, the Torah, then you have the spiritual holiness, and then the land. Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. Those are the three principles of holiness. You could even say, maybe, you can just suggest, that it's like, it's a progression. First, you have to be a nation. Then you can develop an identity, get the Torah. Once you're a nation and you have the Torah, you have your sense of ideology and principles and morality, then you can go to the land and build a society. It has to go in that order. That's what we saw in this week's Parsha. It couldn't go out of order. We couldn't go at Derech Eretz Plishtim before Sinai. You have to have Sinai first. But the ultimate expression is in Israel, is the people. Maybe even, I mean, he says it's Avos Shebekedusha. It's clearly Av here does not mean parent, father. It means Av, like Av Malacha. Principle category, just like we have 39 principles of prohibited labor on Shabbos. You have three principles of holiness and three principles of antithesis. But you could even say maybe it does apply to the three avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Avraham made us a nation. Yitzchak was willing to die for his people. And Yaakov created the 12 tribes, the land. You know, that's where you have the land. You know, it took time to actually settle it. But I mean, maybe you could even say it fits there. But anyways, just to conclude, so you now have these three paradigms of anti-Semitism. And it helps to kind of put things into perspective of what's happening. That there are those who simply, their goal is to fight the Torah. There are those who their goal is to fight the Jewish people. And then there are those, and this has been predicted for thousands of years, in first of all, in the Torah itself, and then the Gra wrote hundreds of years ago, the Vilna Gaon, that then there are those who their goal is to prevent Jewish political sovereignty and statehood in their land. And that's what we're dealing with, especially today, at least, especially in Israel. Paula.
I was just thinking about
it. And if you have to go, please go. I know we're going late today, so please go.
It's very beautiful for my kids. I was going to say, just learning that you just told me in the support of this son, I think it's done, you know. And like, it seems like it's almost like it's inevitable. Like,
yes. Yes, anti-Semitism is inevitable, and it happens. It's usually cyclical, and it's been predicted. That's what we say in the Pesach Seder, Bechol Dor V'Dor Omdim Malinu L'Chaloseinu, and eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam, Hashem saves us. It doesn't mean we still don't have to do something about it, though. It might mean how we fight. You know, we should fight through goodness, through bringing light to darkness, not through trying to just cancel people and destroy people. We should try to bring more goodness to the world. Also recognizing that it's inevitable and it is going to happen, but hopefully we will come to a time, you know, we've been talking about in the Messianic era, when it will no longer occur, and so hopefully we will get to that. But for now, yeah, you're right, it's inevitable. But the point is, hopefully at least these paradigms help us to, you know, categorize the different types of anti-Semitism. And keep in mind that is the Vilna Gaon is not saying here that these people are the actual physical descendants. You know, we're not saying that, you know, that, for example, that the Nazis were actually, you know, the genetic descendants of Edom. They were the spiritual descendants. These are spiritual paradigms, types. So even if the Plishtim of old have no relation to the current Palestinians, the point is not to say that they're the same people, but there's paradigms of anti-Semitism, of hatred, and therefore ways in which we can relate to it, and hopefully that can help us in determining how to best respond to it, and by placing the different types into their spiritual paradigms, and that helps us figure out, you know, what they represent and who they are, not who they genetically are, not who their great-great-great-grandparents are. That's a different story. But the main thing, really, is that just like we have, you know, the holiday of Purim, overcoming Haman, and we have the holiday of Hanukkah, overcoming the Greeks. We've overcome Moab and Edom. There's still no holiday for overcoming the Plishtim. And my hope is that there will be a holiday for that. Maybe there's a holiday yet to be established. That will be the holiday for overcoming the Plishtim. May it come soon in our days. That will be a great celebration. And I look forward to celebrating it all together.